O'Neill is the author of David Jones, 175 Years. Hello, Helen.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Helen, what we should do firstly is establish what a department store is.
It's an interesting question. A department store is something that at one stage was called a universal provider because it was the kind of store where you could buy everything, absolutely everything. Harrods in the UK apparently famously declared that you could get everything from a pin to perhaps an elephant in the store. So it's a place, it's a store of many stores, is the short answer.
In a lot of country towns in Australia, they have their local drapery, which was almost a small department store in itself.
That's a really good point. David Jones, which first opened in May in 1838, so 175 years ago, it was opened by a Welshman, David Jones, in Sydney as a drapery. So it was a place, it was the go-to place where when you needed anything to do with fabrics, linens, those basic sorts of things. I think it's no coincidence that David Jones, that is, it's now a very big department store, a national department store, had its openings, its foundations in the drapery business. And it was David Jones's family who realized that people wanted a bit more than a drapery after a certain kind of time, and that they would that they needed all manner of things. And at that point, the universal provider, the department store era, began.
And I think it was Bowens, which is a West Australian department store. I'm not sure, but I think that started in Broken Hill as a drapery as well. So it's a fairly common theme that they started as drapers and then moved into a lot of the department stores would have.
Well, certainly in those early years, because remember, this is just about 50 years after the founding of the colony of Australia. So we're talking a very long time ago. This is what people wanted and needed to buy to make their way in Australia back in those colonial early sorts of days. So drapery businesses were a fundamental way of shopping back then.
Now, David Jones was a merchant, a Welsh merchant. Tell us, did he then meet up with Charles Appleton? Is there a story about that?
That's right. The story of David Jones, he was born in Wales, in the Welsh countryside, and he pretty early on showed entrepreneurial signs. His family actually wanted him to become, they wanted him to go into the priesthood by the looks of things, but he wasn't the least bit interested in that and started working in a store in one of the larger towns in Wales. But very early on, you could tell that he was, you know, really thinking about selling and how to sell, and he got one of his sisters to sell conical hats, which were very hot back then in Wales, very, very desirable things, to all their friends. So he was busy kind of making links, working out what was selling. And he went to London in the end and met up with a man called Charles Appleton, who had a chain of three drapery businesses. David Jones agreed to manage one of those businesses, and it happened to be way over the other side of the world in Sydney, Australia. So that's what brought David Jones to Australia.
So it was originally Appleton and Jones?
It was originally Appleton. Yes, Appleton and Jones. David Jones ran that store in Sydney for a while, but things didn't go too well. It ended up in a bit of a court case, and David Jones then set out alone. After the book came out, I was meeting all sorts of people, because everybody's got a story about David Jones, and I actually met one of the descendants of the Charles Appleton side of things as well, which was fascinating. So there are still Appletons about in Australia.
And did they see the story differently?
They kind of knew the basics of the story. They saw it pretty much the same way, I have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, Appleton dissolved a bit into the ether compared to the massive dynasty and success that David Jones and company then went on to achieve.
It's a difficult time to start a business because just after that, you're coming into the Great Depression. And it would have been a hard time to go into business.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There was ups and downs, and there was gold rushes and recessions, and, you know, the wool businesses would boom and then bust. So it was difficult from the point of merchants, but it was also very difficult from the point of customers. One thing that David Jones did very well was extending lines of credit to customers who perhaps this season really couldn't afford to pay, but next season would be able to afford to pay. So that worked really well for this particular department store. It's something I think some of the other department stores picked up here and there and did as well. But yes, things went up and down. You had the Great Depression. Then, of course, you had World War One, World War Two. Not too many businesses managed to survive and thrive in the way that DJs did. But there were a lot of other department stores about, of course, for a long, long time until the big two, emerged, and like Myer and David Jones seemed to be almost the only two left in Australia.
Did they? Did the business actually fold, or did it go through a really difficult time, and then have to reopen in the late 1880s?
Yeah, very, very early on. Actually, it was at the end of David Jones's career, or so he thought. He had handed over the business to a number of other businessmen, and he figured it was in fairly good hands, and then he effectively retired. But unfortunately, they didn't do too well, and he found himself having to step back, come out of retirement to recreate David Jones again. He pulled it back out of debt, turned it back into a thriving company, and then resigned for a second time and handed it over to his son, Edward Lloyd Jones. So it was, David Jones created the store, resigned, recreated the store, and then made sure his own son was in place to make sure he could manage the store's success for the future. And indeed, it was Edward Lloyd Jones, who was David Jones's son, who brought back to Sydney this new idea in retailing, which was the notion of a department store. Very European concept at that time.
And did the business stay with the family from then on, or did the family then decide to leave the business at some stage?
They stayed in charge for a very, very long time. It wasn't until the 1980s that David Jones was taken over by a company called Adsteam, Adelaide Steamship. John Spalvins managed to wrest control from the family. So it was at that point that the dynasty effectively ended. It's now in the hands of shareholders.
It's a wonderful thing taking a look at the old department stores, whichever ones people remember, whether it be Myers that started in Bendigo, whether it be Bowen's and a whole stack of Grace Brothers. There are a whole lot of them. I've got a lovely text here, say, Trev, Perth was obviously where you grew up. Our town planners ruined the great old buildings like Bowen's, and they should never have been left behind, because a lot of these old department stores are beautiful buildings.
They're staggeringly beautiful. When these companies built flagship stores, they were really building flagship buildings. So with regards to David Jones in Sydney, it was in 1927 that the Elizabeth Street flagship was opened. And apparently it stopped traffic. It literally stopped traffic. The police had to hold people back. But the manner of the building itself, it was grand and magnificent and just a beautiful architectural object. And this was true of many of the department stores around the country. I think it's a terrible shame when buildings like that are destroyed, because they meant something very significant at the time. And if they're kept and looked after, they remain beautiful parts of our heritage.
Whether or not they're department stores or not.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely. You can in Sydney, for example, one of them is the Mark Foy's building, I believe, is now used for court cases, for example. They're just lovely structures with beautiful rooms. You can do many things with them.
A lot of people wanted to join us. Good morning, Trish.
Oh, good morning. This is a subject very dear to my heart, because I used to work for the Western Stores and Edgley's Limited in Orange, New South Wales, which eventually became part of the DJ setup.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined them in 1947 at the princely salary as the secretary to the manager of £4.10 a week.
So what department store was it before DJs took it over?
It was the Western Stores and the Edgley's Limited.
Okay, and that was a department store in itself?
Yes, it was. It originated as Dalton Brothers, just a general store, and it grew and grew. And when I joined, we had two floors, and we had everything from the machinery, which was, tractors and harvesters and stuff, and fashion. We had a whole floor which was called the fashion floor. It was run by a tiger of a lady called Rose Spence. While I was there, we installed the first escalator in Orange, and only one. So it depended how lucky you were whether you wanted to go up or down.
Isn't that incredible, though, that it went from farm machinery through to fashion?
Oh, yes. Manchester, China Ware, all the a shoe department, a big grocery department.
And what was it like when DJs took it over?
Well,
what changes happened?
Well, I left it. I was there for 5 years.
Okay.
And I don't quite know when, actually, I don't even know when Dalton Brothers began, and I don't know when it was taken over, but it is part of the DJ's background.
Trish, thank you. Helen, I guess there was an expansion of David Jones by which they did go in, and where some other department stores may have been struggling, or by through the expansion of David Jones, they moved into other department stores.
That's absolutely right. They empire built by cherry-picking other department stores. And Trish's story is absolutely fascinating because she started working there in 1947. 1947 is a very significant year for department stores because it's the year that David Jones brought European fashion for the first time, really, to Australia. There were a number of stores doing it, but DJs managed to bring Christian Dior's very famous new look to Sydney, the first time that had ever been shown outside of Paris. And what the department stores were doing at that time were competing head-to-head to get the best of European fashion onto their floors, get them out, get those lovely, lovely gowns out to a very, very hungry Australian public who were dying for that kind of post-war chic. She mentions also that the store she was working at had the first escalator in orange. And this is another feature of department stores. They brought in the latest technologies, as you call it, so the best kind of lifts, the first escalators. They were really at the cutting edge of things. It was an interesting time. She also mentioned that she had a tiger of a female boss. And one of the great joys of working on DJs, the book about David Jones, was finding out how many wonderful women were working in the stores at this time. And they managed to do very, very well. There are many stories of terrific female bosses, of women managing to achieve career heights that it took them quite a long time to do. Later on, post-50s, post-60s. It's interesting. It was a great moment, that.
And possibly department stores being the forerunner in breaking that glass ceiling, and that the women are starting to move into managerial roles through department stores?
I suspect that's quite correct. David Jones, for example, had a very fearsome head of its advertising department called Eleanor Donaldson. Mrs. D, she was known as. And she became known far and wide across the industry, and you look at her career trajectory at that time and you wonder, in a sense, you know, how this happened. It was wonderful. There was a great blooming of female careers back then. It took quite some time for that to be recreated later on.
Thank you, Peter, who mentions Cronshaw's in Bunbury, Parry's in Narrogin, and Streeter and Mail in Broome. I worked at Streeter's Bottle Shop. It's a good shop, Streeter's in Broome. Good morning, Maureen.
I was just going to talk about a feature of some of the smaller department stores in country towns, and I can remember these. This was in stores like Blood's in Grafton, and there was a store at Charters Towers right up to the 1980s. I'm not quite sure what's happening now that had this. This was the overhead system of wires for managing money. These stores had a whole network of overhead wires, and money was put in a little metal caption, and that was sent over these wires, probably to a central accounting or registry section, and then the change came back through these wires back to the actual counter.
I don't know. You know, I wonder if they were in some of the larger places as well, Helen, originally.
Oh, they absolutely were. David Jones had exactly this, so I would imagine the other bigger stores did as well. They also had a wonderful thing, interdepartmental speaking tubes.
Yeah.
And where you could shout into one and be heard, you know, quite somewhere else in the building. I don't know if that was in the smaller stores as well, but these wonderful contraptions that were getting money about from A to B so that all the girls on the tills could cope with what they were doing and take receipts across to the other end of the stores. It's interesting to hear that this was going on in the smaller stores also.
Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
Yes, Don.
I'm 86. I can remember H.G. Coles opening in Smith Street, Collingwood, and also in Johnston Street, Collingwood. Nothing over 2 and 6, that's 25 cents. In the Collingwood store, the tables, you know, for displaying the goods, were just made out of 2x3 and with chicken wire on the top, and they had all the goods piled on top of it. This is in the Great Depression. And I remember, I remember in particular a young girl standing up there in a black dress and a white collar, and she had a glass in her hand. She was hitting the rim with a pencil, and she had 20 or 30 people around her. And I said to my mother, why has she got that snooty look on her face? And my mother said, that's because she's got a job. Nobody else has got a job.
Which was so important at the time. Thank you. Yeah, it was a difficult time for a lot of people. Don, thank you. Just a comment off Facebook. Hope you'll be discussing, like, Buckley and Nunn in Bourke Street in Melbourne department store, which opened its doors in 1851 and competed credibly with Dave and Jones until sold to them in 1982, resulting in the merger with the David Jones Group. And there was also places like Dimmies and Forges. And this was a time, Helen, where there was also, I guess, there were the department stores that were for the wealthy, and there were department stores for people who didn't have as much money.
That's right. That's why it's so interesting that when the stores, the chains, well, when the department stores began amalgamating others, that you kind of lost that sense of the many individual types of department store. I mean, certainly 1982, when David Jones bought Buckley and Nunn, was a very significant moment for DJs and for Melbourne, really. Because DJs then opened its first store in Melbourne that same year and used the Buckley and Nunn to do it. So as these very high-end department stores started becoming empires in their own right, I wonder if you did kind of lose something in a certain way.
Yeah.
David Jones took over a lot of different stores, and some of the other bigger stores did that as well. And whilst DJs is a tremendous store, it would be very interesting to know what, for example, Buckley and Nunn would be like today, what John Martin's in Adelaide would be like today had they not been taken over.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning. My great-grandmother was a McWhirter, and they started the store in Brisbane.
Tell us a little bit about it, Michael.
Oh, it's down at the... The building is still there, but then McWhirters were taken over by Meyer, and I'm not sure when.
And this was because I don't know McWhirters in Brisbane, Michael, but it was quite a large department store.
Yeah, it was a department store. Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, it's still there. I've never seen it. I've been to Brisbane, but I should go up there and have a look at it. But,
yeah.
It became took over by Meyer, and my mother and my aunt were all given shares in Meyer.
Oh, okay.
And we were then given shares in Meyer too, and I had Meyer shares.
Michael, thank you. I just want to go back to Helen, because around this time, Meyer would have been taking over department stores at the same time as DJs were.
Indeed, what then went on to happen was that the situation you have today, where you've just got the big two, Meyer and DJs. But Meyer was also run by a bit of a dynasty as well. There was a family in charge of that department store also. So it's a sort of interesting personal situation as well, I think, these very aristocratic families who were running these big, voracious stores.
It is sort of, because, and I know you're right about David Jones, but in a lot of ways it is sad that we lost the other stores, and it's just part of economics that larger stores, and it happens everywhere, take over smaller stores. But some of those smaller department stores do manage to survive in some little ways as well.
They do. One of the ways they survive is actually, interestingly, within the archives of David Jones. I'm not sure what the archives of the Meyer stores are like, but David Jones has an enormous archive that is full of paraphernalia from many of the stores that it overtook. So you're seeing information about the staff who worked there, the things that went on, the crazy, it looks like now, shenanigans that stores would go to try to attract customers. They had zoos almost in stores. They used to have animals in stores to attract families, many, many different kinds of fun events. This sort of thing, using department stores as theatre, was something that was almost turned into an art form at one point. And talking to people who got involved in this, who were, you know, taking elephants perhaps in and out of department stores in order to create these wonderful, wonderful, kind of very mad events was great fun as well.
I've got lovely text here from Tony saying department store cafeterias were all a go. Every time my sister would treat me to the pictures in the city, you'd go to the cafeteria at the department stores. It became that a trip to the department store was more than that. Because I can remember going to Coles for lunch whenever we'd go into the city when I was little, and that was the big treat, was to go to the cafeterias. So it was more than just a trip shopping. It was almost a day out.
Especially for people from the country, by the sounds of things. But even in the city, from different areas in the cities, lots of people remember being taken in by their mother or their grandmother, and their parents, you know, their mothers would be very dressed up. They'd be wearing gloves and hats. The children would have to dress in their Sunday best to go to these places. It was really a big event for all the family.
Well, the bow tie would come on, don't you worry.
That's right.
Your best
and
shorts,
you used to be able to
socks.
Get little photographs as well. People remember having their photographs taken in their Sunday best as part of all this too.
Robert, good morning. Are you there, Robert? Lost him. We'll come back and see if we can find him. Hello, Daphne.
Oh, good morning. Yes, I used to work at McDowell's Limited. That was in King and George Street, Sydney, and was a very big department store. It was about six floors high, and I worked in a mail-order department.
Hmm.
And every year we used to send out 70,000 catalogues twice a year to all the country people. And it was a real family institution. If you worked there, your sister got a job, and it was just really family. But
Daphne, we've just been talking about that. How important were they for employment for women?
Oh, very, very important, I think. And there was men there too, but I think it was getting towards the stage, if you were going to get married, you were certainly, they kept you on. And then I think it was 1952, there was a bit of depression came on and they were putting people off. But I was lucky because I was still single and I was kept on.
That was what I was going to ask you, because that time there was a bit of a thing about when women got married that they would lose their employment.
Oh, that's right, yes. But, you know, I was lucky, and we had a beautiful cafeteria there called the Beach Room. And it was just a family, and I loved going to work. Really, you know, it wasn't a job. It was beautiful.
Daphne, how important were country people to the city department store?
Well, you know, for the mail orders, it was amazing. And as I said before, 70,000 catalogues twice a year, and then the orders would keep coming in. And I used to get worried sometimes because some of the country towns were only small, and we were sending out the same kind of dresses to everybody, in the town.
Actually, it's interesting with mail order because it's basically online purchasing.
Oh yes, now it is.
Yes. Helen, Daphne, thank you. The mail order side of it is a whole other side of the business.
Yeah, these mail order, it's so interesting that Daphne was working in that particular department, in this department store, because mail order departments really became the economic engine rooms of department stores. DJ's released its first catalogue in 1890, and as with Daphne's department store, it was in part because country customers had such a thirst for what department stores could provide. And the department stores started being very smart about this. She mentioned 70,000 catalogues twice a year. That's a phenomenal amount. And you're absolutely right in terms of thinking about it rather as internet shopping. Today, there's a big echo of the old mail order catalogue and the reach, the old mail order reach in this very high-end digital world we live in now. It's interesting.
Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Richard.
The Foy and Gibson in Perth were taken over by DJs. They had that huge building, which you might have remembered, that's between St. George's Terrace and Hay Street.
Yeah.
And all the way through. And they had the most amazing Christmas windows every year. And I worked for their display department then, and they also had a place called Bon Marché right up the top of the town hall. Do you ever remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
And they had the sloping wall at the end up near the shoe department. There was also a Hearn's.
Oh, I'd forgotten about a Hearn's.
A Hearn's, how could you forget a Hearn's? They actually did a role reversal, you see. They actually took over the DJ stores when DJs were in trouble in Claremont, Rockingham and Booragoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then when DJs became viable again, DJs took over a Hearn's.
They swapped it around.
So it sort of went like full circle.
Because
so,
David Jones weren't that strong in WA.
No, because of Bowens, because of Meyer, because they all had... For the size of WA, I think we had about six department stores. Walsh's?
Walsh's were another one.
They were basically menswear, but it was just an amazing town for the number of department stores that were there.
And in the end, Bowens got taken over. Didn't Bowens get taken over by Meyer in the end?
No, Baird's did.
Okay.
You know the big white one on the corner? Used to be on the corner?
Yeah.
I think Bones... I'm not sure who took over Bones.
I just want to go back to...
Right.
I just want to go back to Helen. Because David Jones, very successful in the East. Were they successful in the West?
It took a while for that success to really reach out. Richard's absolutely right. It was like a game of Monopoly for a while there, where Hearn's took on DJs and then DJs, you know, kind of got some more muscle in it and then snapped up a Hearn's in turn. The West, it was a long way away from David Jones's headquarters in New South Wales, and the company's fortunes did go up and down with the various managements. So it wasn't quite as simple at all times as DJs just progressing.
Was it important that, I mean, it's easy for a department store and a large department store to expand and to take concepts to different states, but there's an individuality about states as well. And was it important to recognise those individualities?
I'm sure it would have been.
Yeah,
in
country to city
sure
too.
It would have been. Yes, absolutely. Well, certainly the stores that have been in place there for many, many years, you'd think would have a great advantage over some interloper coming in and just setting up. It's so interesting to me that so many people are calling in with different stories of the different department stores, wherever those stores may be. Another thing that so struck me whilst I was researching this book was how important department stores have been to Australians right across the country, whether it's David Jones or other department stores. People got jobs as youngsters. They, you know, people married people they met in department stores. There's, you know, they grew up there. They had marriages. There's births. There's deaths. It's a whole way of life right across the country.
That's why you'd have to be very careful if you're going to be taking over a department store that is so loved that you don't actually lose the character of that store.
Indeed, you might think that that if that happens and they get it wrong, that customers will just turn their back on what you're doing.
Well, you see, the West doesn't like it when the East takes over.
The old East-West divide.
Danny, good morning.
Morning, Trevor.
Yes, Danny.
Yeah, this gentleman mentioned earlier about McWhirter's in Fortitude Valley, Brewston.
Yeah.
The building's still there. Its rival was round the corner, T.C. Byrne. And in those days, the Protestants shopped at McWhirter's and the Catholics would go to T.C. Boone.
Isn't that wonderful? Danny, thank you. Our news is coming up. We'll take some more calls after the news. Helen, it's an amazing story of department stores. And, of course, David Jones, having 175 years within the business, takes a look at how that has moved.
Indeed. It's been great fun to write about it, I have to say.
Helen, thank you very much for telling us just a little bit about it today.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been great fun.
Helen O'Neill, who's the author of David Jones, 175 years. I mean, we'll take some more calls. If you've got any stories that you want to tell about the old department stores, what you used to do there and what you enjoyed about them. And I was just wanting to ask you as well, do you reckon there's a place for department stores still? I can't remember the last time I went to a department store. I don't like shopping very much anyway. But is there really a place for department stores anymore? Do you buy most of your stuff online, or have you got other shops that you would go to outside department stores? And are they a little bit elitist? I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd go to a department store for anything. Are they sort of like old dinosaurs, department stores? I mean, they're time and their place, and I'm sure they're lovely, wonderful places. I used to have to wear my long socks and bow tie to go to the department store. This wasn't last year. This is about 50 years ago. Hello, Bernadette.
Oh, hi, Trevor. How are you going?
Did you used to have to wear hats and a glove to go to the department store?
Well, hats and gloves were very big in the 50s, weren't they?
Oh, they were. You had to wear them if you go to the department store.
Yeah, they were huge.
We'll talk about McWhirters in a second, but do you still use them?
I'm not what the world's biggest shopper.
Thank goodness for that, Bernadette, because it's such a waste of time.
But I was thinking while I was waiting, I actually come from a very small town in Queensland, and the relationship with the local town equivalent of a department store was quite good because, you know, you'd go in to buy you a pair of shoes for the new school year and the person working behind the counter would know your size.
But look, the local drapery, which was sort of the department store of country towns because they did sell menswear, womenswear, children's wear, pots and pans. They basically sold everything, the local drapery. And they were incredibly important to country towns.
Well, they had a really strong relationship with you. They knew your size, they knew your hat size.
And the great thing was, as a kid, if you couldn't get it at that store, you didn't get it.
Well, exactly.
And it meant
that
everybody wore the same clothes.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was your size, but in maybe two different colours.
Exactly. So there was no snobbery. Everyone had the same stuff on.
I frankly get confused in large stores, Trevor.
Yeah.
Still.
No, we don't like going shopping much.
I remember McWhirter's, and I remember in this was the early 60s, because I was born in the late 50s, is that there was a bridge across one of the main streets of the valley, which is like Fortitude Valley, and it was a bridge across the street. It was all quite exciting.
Yeah.
And so I remember McWhirter's, and there was another store down in Roma Street called McDonald and East, which people in Brisbane might remember, and that existed up until the 70s. And it was quite big, and Eric East was a tailor, and he came from London, and I know that because my step-grandmother also came from London and was, you know, knew him.
Mm.
So, you know, there was quite a little connection there.
See, this was at a time also when you would buy a suit and you would be able to have it fitted and tailored.
Oh.
So you might buy a suit off the rack, but it would be fitted and tailored in there to maybe not tailored from the beginning, but you would have your suit then fitted to you properly.
Well, it was an experience and it was a really planned purchase, wasn't it?
Oh, it's a huge purchase.
You know, nothing spontaneous.
No, not at all.
But, it was great. And I remember walking in with my grandfather in the 70s and you know, you have to kind of think back. At some point in history, the radios were crystal sets.
Mm.
And he asked accidentally for a crystal set. And this poor shop attendant walked us across to the glassware.
And you got a lovely set of crystal. Bernadette, thank you. Wendy, good morning.
Oh, it's strange that lady should mention McDonald and East, because that was one I was going to mention, but it went much longer than the 70s. It moved out into the that they still had their street. The shop was actually in George Street in Brisbane, down towards Roma Street.
Yeah.
But they also established a branch store at Garden City Shopping Centre at Upper Mount Gravatt in Brisbane.
Yeah.
And I know that, and it was there for many, many years because I actually worked there after my senior public exams and matriculation exams. Worked there over the Christmas holidays when they first opened there. And it was our favourite store, either the one in the city or the one at Garden City. We all had to go there to get our school uniforms, you know, unless your mother was going to make them, which Mum sometimes did.
Hmm.
And shoes, it was wonderful. And it was the best store, best possible store, until it was taken over by somebody else, and then they just sort of went out of this and that and whatever.
But that's what happens, Wendy. And if you take a look at that experience now compared to department stores now, how different is it?
But they were also, you know, personalised service, like the lady was saying, you know, the same staff were there for forever.
Yeah.
And you know, they had the best dress materials. It was a really lovely experience to go shopping there. And they also had a nice little cafeteria. It wasn't that expensive, you know. And
so it must have been a shame for a lot of people when the other larger department stores started to take over the smaller ones.
Well, yes, also, the other one that I was going to mention was, Lady mentioned McWhirter's. Well, there was another store called Allen and Stark in the centre of Brisbane, and Allen and Stark was taken over by Meyer. And I've got an idea that McWhirter's was as well. McWhirter's, that was down at Fortitude Valley, and McWhirter's just disappeared as a store. But when I was a child, and like that lady, I was born, I have a big birthday this year, and I was born in the 50s, so you can guess which one it is, early 50s. And at Christmas time, I don't know if anybody else has mentioned this, but on top of McWhirter's in the valley, they used to have the most wonderful children's area. And, like, we didn't have theme parks in those days, and they'd have all the rides, you know, that you'd get, well, not chiroplanes and stuff like that, but they'd set it up with wonderful rides on top and activities, you know, for kids, probably knock them downs and stuff like that, and you could spend a day there. And they also had fabulous Christmas windows, as did Allen and Stark.
Which, you know, and the Christmas windows now associated more with those larger department stores as well. Wendy, I must move on because I've got lots of people to talk to. Hello, Andrew.
How you going, Trevor?
Yeah, good, Andrew.
First time caller.
Good on you.
Yeah. Yeah, I live in a place called Murray Bridge in South Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was a 16-year-old lad, a place called here Yudunda Farmers.
Yep.
And, you know, I used to be one of those, if you can remember, paper bag packers at the checkout.
Yeah, yeah.
The old paper bag packer. And the diversity of it, I used to sell grain, bags of grain out the back. They had virtually everything in there. And, yeah, it was a tremendous store. The other one was Bell's. I worked in there, a place called Bell's. And that was like a Myers type thing.
Because they would have been the first port of call for heaps of young people for their first jobs.
Oh, for sure. And in the town, you know, the town was, you know, that was the big shop in the main street. We only had one main street strip of shops mainly, and that was all.
And that was, and we've talked about this before, how, I mean, someone mentioned Streeters up in Broome. For many towns, it was the one place that you would get absolutely everything.
Everything, yeah. And like you said, for a young lad, that was the go, you know, the job for coming out of school and things like that.
Yeah. What do you think of department stores now, Andrew?
Oh, look, I don't really like them all that much because I think, you know, although I've seen in this town especially already, well, city now, but, you know, they're just everything's so less expensive, I suppose, because they're buying in bulk. And it takes it out on the local sort of people who are trying to make money in the town or the city, you know.
Andrew, do you know what the shame is now when you go into and you travel through small towns?
Mm.
Is that there is nothing individual about small towns anymore.
The locality, like the local people aren't there like they used to be.
Yeah, but it's because there are so many franchises. When you used to go into small towns, there would be the local drapers who would be owned, so that would be a separate business.
Yeah.
There would be the bakery. There would be the fruit and veggie shop. There would be all of these things that were all owned by different people. There would be the cafeteria, the milk bar.
Yes, yes.
Now when you go into towns, you see the same coffee franchise. You see the same department store franchise. All you do is see is the same franchises that you see everywhere.
Yeah, and a lot of the people come from out of town. So, you know, the people within the town aren't well as known.
Hmm.
And another one is my father. This was a long time ago in the late 60s. He owned a department store in a place called Madang in Papua New Guinea.
Oh, in Madang?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is on the coast.
Yeah, yeah. It was, it didn't look like like your flash department stores now, but it was on the similar runnings of one. And, the ships used to come in or whatever, and he used to sell all the goods there.
Yeah, look, it's probably the same as the ones in Broome. Hey, Andrew, thank you. And I reckon it's the real set. We might talk about this on another occasion, about how it is that country towns look the same no matter where you go. Because of franchises, I reckon they just make everyone. Anyway, that's a little whinge I want to have.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
I'll say good morning to all the paper throwers out there. There's not enough credit for us blokes.
Oh, we got heaps of paper throwers, Andrew, that ring us up. We got buckets of paper throwers.
We love listening to ABC, I tell you.
Good on you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Joan, good morning to you.
Hello, Trevor. I have a 1928-29 catalogue from Grace Brothers here.
What have you got in there?
Well, it's got every single thing that you could ever want in a home.
Tell us some of
the horses and animals to everything.
Tell us some of the things and how much they cost.
Well, there's garters in every conceivable style and colouring, if you like. And there's also ladies' underwear here. Big boomers.
And what sort of things, because you were saying that there's, what are some of the variations in stuff that's in there?
Well, there's a huge ladies' glove department.
Yeah.
Looks like a whole floor of the building.
Wow.
And there's a ladies' hosiery section. And then you turn over a bit and there's dress flannels, domestic flannels, fabrics. There's furniture. There's things for horses. There's things for travelling.
All right, let's have a look at some of the furniture. How much would... Tell us, is there a lounge chair in there?
Wait on, I'll just get the furniture.
We'll go to the furniture section.
There's bedroom furniture.
Yeah, okay, tell us the price of some of it.
There's an oak... a pedestal cupboard to correspond in polished Queensland maple or silky oak, $54.10. £54.10.
Jeez, it'd be a nice one.
And there's the dressing table and the wardrobe and the bedside cabinet, everything for that.
Wow.
And then you turn over and there's chairs, beautiful chairs, 8-piece maple suite.
Yeah.
Comprising 2 carvers and 6 small chairs, spoon back, braced at sides and upholstered in fabricoid maple, £11.17.
You should have got one of those, Joan.
Oh, I should have, yes. I should have kept the whole lot instead of just the book.
Good on you, Joan. Thank you for the call.
Oh, it's amazing they sold. Grace Brothers sold everything. The index in it is huge.
Thank you for telling us about a bit of it. Good morning, Shirley.
Good morning, Trevor. Yes, my family had general stores in Grafton, Gerard's and McKittrick's. McKittrick's was on South Grafton and Gerard's was on the North Grafton side. There were 2 families related by marriage that owned the businesses, and they were... they had everything, including the very first supermarket that was ever in Grafton. And that was a supermarket until such times as Woolworths moved into the town and it became unviable for the supermarket to continue. But the general store continued for a long, long time.
So it managed to survive outside the supermarket part, but as a department store still with a drapery and with clothes and that sort of stuff?
Oh, they had everything. On the McKittrick side, they used to service the produce as well as all the general store things. And they used to send a person down the river to actually service people who couldn't get into to Grafton, and they would take a truckload of things down for them to be able to purchase. And the other thing that was interesting, I do remember as a small child seeing that money change going from the top floor down to the lower floors. And that lady was quite correct in exactly what she said about it.
They're important places to community, Shirley.
They were very important places, and the families of those businesses were held in very high esteem. And, you know, it's a shame that those things don't exist these days and shopping's become a lot more impersonal, I think.
Oh, it has, and those big department stores have taken over. Shirley, thank you.